call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:32 p.m. on Thursday, January 26, 2023. Present today are Co-Chair Edgman, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Blum, Representative Front, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Cannon, Representative Josephson, Representative Ortiz, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. I see no other legislators in the audience. And so we will go ahead and ask that everyone silence their cell phones and say thank you to our moderator, Emma Turner, from the OIO, and our finance secretary, Bree Wiley, for being with us today. Today we're hearing the revenue forecast from, I'm going to say Commissioner Designee Adam Crum, but he's also Commissioner Adam Crum, so that gives us a little break. We can use either Commissioner or Commissioner Designee Adam Crum from the Department of Revenue, Dan Stickle, Chief Economist from the Economic Research Group, and Colleen Glover, Director of the Tax Division. I also wanted to just make note that the Helen has placed in your drawers, for those of you that are new and aren't really familiar with the drawers that are kept in the finance room, she's placed the current revenue forecast in your drawer, so if you have that, so you have that. And Commissioner Designee Adam Crum, would you like to come forward and introduce your staff and go ahead and begin your presentation? Well, actually, I'll say after you come forward and introduce your staff, we'll ask for questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Commissioner Designee Adam Crum from the Department of Revenue. Glad to be here today to share our revenue forecast from the Department of Revenue. The primary speakers on this today is going to be Chief Economist Dan Stickle and the Economic Research Group, as well as Division Tax Director Colleen Glover.
Do we have any questions for the Commissioner before we begin? All right, seeing none, go ahead.
Chair Johnson, for the record, Dan Stickle, I'm Chief Economist with the Department of Revenue.
Good afternoon, Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director, Department of Revenue.
All right, so thank you for the opportunity to present the Department of Revenue's Fall 2022 Revenue Forecast. Slide 2 contains an agenda for the presentation today. I'll start with a little bit of background about the revenue forecast and some of the key assumptions in the forecast. Then I'll walk through the forecast, starting with the forecast for total state revenue and then diving into the unrestricted general fund portion of the revenue. We have some additional detail around the assumptions for the petroleum revenue forecast in particular. And then finally, at the end, there's an update with some information about oil and gas production tax holidays. So slide 4 shows some background information about the fall revenue forecast. So we published the revenue forecast in mid-December in the Revenue Sources book, sometimes abbreviated as the RSB, and we'll be doing an update later this spring, in either March or April, with the spring revenue forecast. The Revenue Sources book, it's an annual publication. There's a lot of great information in there about all of the state's revenue sources and key forecast variables for those revenue sources. We gather information from our tax management system, the state accounting system, and we work with numerous other state agencies to compile the data and forecast. And our economic research group maintains models for 10-year forecast models for all of the state's major revenue sources. The Revenue Sources book does fulfill a statutory requirement. There's a statutory requirement that the governor provide a revenue forecast ahead of the budget release, and then also a statutory requirement for a long-term fiscal plan. Slide 5 states some of the key assumptions behind the revenue forecast. So we do want to point out that this forecast comes in a period of continued uncertainty. Recent events in China have highlighted some of the continuing uncertainty around the COVID pandemic. Obviously, the ongoing conflict in Europe has highlighted some of the geopolitical uncertainty, and those are, along with uncertainty around Federal Reserve policy and other variables. So we want to point out that our forecast is one plausible scenario within a range of potential outcomes. And so some of the key assumptions that go into the revenue forecast, we're forecasting stable growth in investment markets. We have a 7% assumed annual return for the permanent fund in the current fiscal year, and then a 7.05% assumed annual return for fiscal year 2024 and beyond. On the federal revenue forecast, we've included all known stimulus funding that's happened as of the beginning of December of 2022. That includes all of the federal COVID relief, as well as updated estimates for impacts of the infrastructure bill that was passed last year. Looking at the petroleum revenue forecast, which we'll get into in more detail later on, we're assuming a North Slope oil price of $88.45 per barrel for the current fiscal year, $81 per barrel for fiscal year 2024, and then we have that forecast moderating slightly to $75 by the end of the 10-year forecast period. Looking at the non-petroleum revenue forecast, we assume that underlying economic activity has largely returned to normal following the downturn after COVID. There is some talk among economists and the press about potential economic slowdown. This forecast assumes that if there is any slowdown or potential recession, that would be short-lived and mild. Looking at tourism in particular, we're assuming a continued rebound in the cruise ship industry and tourism generally. So we're forecasting a total capacity of a little over 1.6 million passengers. We're assuming that those ships will be sailing about 90% full next year. And then a note on mining. We use the minerals price outlook from the futures market to derive some of our mining forecasts. Those futures prices have pulled back a little bit since we produced our spring forecast. So the forecast for some of the minerals related revenues has been brought back a little bit. Still robust activity and revenue from the mining industry, but a little lower than what we were forecasting in the spring.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I do have a question on this particular slide when we're looking at roughly 7% return, it looks like, for investments on year 23 and 24. I'm wondering if you have a sense of the return on investment for 22, for example. I was just looking at the permanent fund returns last year online, for example, and for last year on the permanent fund returns, I have it minus 1%, and the year before that, it was at 30%. So pretty vast swing, wild swing, whopping 30%. So I guess with that in mind, I wondered if you had any comment to that, and also as you go through the rest of the slides, if you would so kindly point out the ones where a lower return than the 7% could have a big impact with regard to overall decisions.
Absolutely. Representative Galvin, through the chair, I believe the numbers you quoted for fiscal year 21 and 22 were accurate. So fiscal year 21 was a record return for the permanent fund, and then financial markets did pull back a little bit in fiscal year 22. The forecast is for more moderate returns going forward. The 7% and 7.05% are definitely a most likely scenario with a range of potential outcomes, and we do have a slide further on in the presentation that puts a sensitivity analysis around potential investment returns.
Chair, a follow-up, just if you wouldn't mind in the future pointing out that one slide and then also helping us, like I say, if there is some big impact, if this were not to be as predicted within the 7% range, it would be great for you to let us know. Thank you very much.
right, continuing on to slide six. So this is a visual slide that looks at that fiscal year 22 total state revenue. This is state revenue from all sources, regardless of whether there's restrictions around how the revenue is used. What you can see is that federal revenue and petroleum revenue generated the majority of state revenue in fiscal year 2022. And investments, as mentioned, actually did show net losses for the year. That was the first time that we've seen net losses on investments since fiscal year 2009 in the Great Recession. And again, that came on the heels of record returns in fiscal year 2021. And looking at all the other industries combined, while they're important to the state in terms of state revenue, they added up to a little over 12% of total state revenue in fiscal year 22.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you for the chair. The FY 22 federal revenue at 80% of all our revenues is kind of startling. I wonder, is that the COVID blip? And in most years, I know we always get a lot of revenue from the feds, but out of context can double, or we always should have a ratio that shows we get so much more from federal dollars. Yeah, we had a couple billion from the feds for COVID, but we always get more than we get.
Sure, Representative Hannon through the chair. So for fiscal year 22, we have kind of two things going on when you're looking at the share of revenue that is represented by federal revenue. First, you have a high numerator with a lot of the one-time COVID funds in fiscal year 22, and then you have a lower denominator with the investment losses. And that actually leads into the next slide where we show fiscal year 2023 and try to show kind of a more typical year. And I will use that as the perfect transition to slide seven, which shows our forecast for fiscal year 2023 and what we're expecting in terms of the contributions from the various sources of revenue without some of those distortions that we just discussed on the investment losses and the high federal revenue. So for fiscal year 2023, we're expecting that the three major sources of revenue, investment, federal, and petroleum, all generate about a third of total state revenue. And then all other sources combined are forecast to generate a little over 7% of the total state revenue. So now moving into the revenue forecast, we start with slide 9, which is a summary of some of the changes to the revenue forecast in the fall forecast compared to the spring forecast that was released early in 2022. Looking at oil prices, the spring forecast came out during a period of unprecedented volatility. We were releasing that forecast right as the conflict in Ukraine was beginning, so there was a lot of uncertainty and volatility around oil prices. As the markets have kind of returned to a little bit more stability, the outlook for oil prices has come down a little bit. So we did reduce our fiscal year 2023 forecast for Alaska North Slope oil prices by $12.55 per barrel, and then our fiscal year 2024 forecast was reduced by $9 per barrel. Looking at the permanent fund transfer, in terms of unrestricted general fund revenue, the way the permanent fund transfer is calculated is it's based on 5% of the ending value in the first five of the last six fiscal years. So when we did the spring forecast and the fiscal year 2023 budget was passed, the permanent fund transfer for fiscal year 23 was known at that time. The fiscal year 2024 forecast has been reduced by about $75 million, and that's based on the lower investment returns than were projected for fiscal year 2022. Looking at total unrestricted revenue, we've reduced the fiscal year 2023 forecast by about $1.1 billion, and the fiscal year 2024 forecast by about around $700 million. And those reductions are almost entirely due to the reduction in the oil price forecast. So slide 10, this is the last slide that I'll show that looks at total state revenue. But this shows total state revenue for fiscal year 2022, and then our forecast for fiscal year 2023 and 2024. In our revenue forecast and in budget documents that you'll see from Office of Management and Budget and others, there are four categories of revenues that are presented. So the unrestricted general fund revenues, those are technically, those are the revenues that are available for general appropriation for any purpose. And those are the revenues that when you hear people talking about revenue for purposes of budget discussion, a lot of times they're focusing on those unrestricted general fund revenues. The designated general fund revenues, those are technically available for appropriation, but they're customarily appropriated for some specific purpose. An example is that half of the alcohol tax revenue is customarily appropriated for alcohol and drug abuse treatment and prevention. The other restricted revenue category, those are revenues that are truly restricted in how they can be used, so they're not available for general appropriation. They have some restriction, either federal law, constitution, debt covenants, around how those revenues can be used. An example there is going to be the constitutional dedication of royalty revenue to the permanent fund, or tax revenue from aviation fuel, which must be used to support the airports by federal law. And then finally, we show all federal revenue is restricted if the federal government places different restrictions around how we can use those federal funds. So in total, fiscal year 22, total state revenue was about $8.7 billion, and we're forecasting that at a little over $15 billion per year in fiscal year 23 and 24. And then the unrestricted general fund portion of that is about $6.9 billion in fiscal year 22, and we're forecasting $7.2 billion of unrestricted general fund in fiscal year 23 and $6.9 billion in fiscal year 2024.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Be sure to know the friends of the Department of Revenue. So just a quick question regarding federal receipts. The increase from FY 23 to FY 24, is that specifically due to the anticipation of locking up or accessing a lot of the federal funds for capital projects, given all the federal money that's going out there for broadband and infrastructure?
Sure. Representative Stapp, through the chair. So the federal revenue forecast is provided by the Office of Management and Budget, so I defer to them for specific details on the forecast. I do know that the infrastructure bill and kind of the having some of those monies start to come online, that's baked into the forecast, so I would speculate that that's the reason for the increase there.
Thanks.
So turning to slide 11, for the rest of the revenue slide, we'll be focusing on the unrestricted general fund revenue forecast, since that's where there's the most flexibility and discretion around how those monies can be used in the budget. So investment revenue is one of the two largest sources of unrestricted revenue, along with petroleum revenue. Investments are expected to contribute about $3.1 billion in unrestricted revenue in fiscal year 2022, and forecast at $3.4 billion in fiscal year 23, and a little over $3.5 billion in fiscal year 2024. The main element of that is the percent of market value transfer from the permanent fund. Petroleum revenue generated about $3.5 billion of unrestricted revenue in fiscal year 22. It's forecast at $3.4 billion in fiscal year 23 and $2.9 billion in fiscal year 24. And then lastly, various non-petroleum, non-investment revenue sources are expected to contribute about $450 million in fiscal year 23 and about $474 million in fiscal year 24. And over the next couple of slides, what we'll do is we'll walk through each of these categories in a little bit more detail.
Thank
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I wanted to ask on this for 2023 and 2024, the non-petroleum revenue line, is this inclusive of any of the governor's plans to bring in carbon credit market for Alaska?
Representative Galvin, through the chair, that's a great question. And just to clarify, our revenue forecast is based on current law, so we don't include any new revenue sources or any proposed legislation.
Thank you.
So moving on to slide 12, this provides a little bit more detail on the investments portion of unrestricted general fund revenue. So the permanent fund transfer alone is expected to account for between 43 and 62% of unrestricted revenue each year over the 10-year revenue forecast. In addition to that permanent fund transfer, there's a small amount of revenue from unrestricted revenue from other investments. This represents primarily earnings on cash balances of the general fund. You see there was a loss in those other investments in fiscal year 2022. This had to do with the impact of vastly rising interest rates on various fixed income investments. But we are expecting the returns on those general fund investments to return to a small positive revenues in fiscal year 2023 and beyond. Moving on to slide 13, so this shows the estimated transfer from the permanent fund to the general fund for fiscal year 22 and then each year of the 10-year revenue forecast. The forecast is expected to reach about $4.5 billion by fiscal year 2032. That's based on an assumption of 7.05% long-term annual return and a 5% of market value payout. For the presentation, and this gets to the question from Representative Galvin earlier, we've added two more lines showing a high case and a low case for the presented market value transfer. What we did here is we looked at a range of possible investment returns, and this high case and low case represents a 10th percentile and a 90th percentile based on our analysis. And basically, In the low case, we have a fairly flat percent of market value transfer, and then in the high case, we have a transfer that's growing even faster and more than expected in the forecast. Overall, the takeaway from this slide is that the permanent fund transfer is a fairly stable revenue source, especially compared to petroleum, where there's a lot of price volatility. And a lot of part of that stability has to do with how the permanent fund transfer is calculated. So it's based on that annual average market value of the first five of the last six fiscal years, and that kind of smooths out the amount of the transfer and removes a lot of the volatility if there's year-to-year fluctuations in investment values. Slide 14 looks at unrestricted revenues from petroleum. So the state, there's four main sources of unrestricted revenue from petroleum. The state levies a property tax on all oil and gas property in the state. That's a fairly stable revenue source. That generates a little over $100 million per year for the state. I do want to point out that this represents only the state share of property tax revenue. The majority of property tax from oil and gas actually goes to municipalities where the property is located, and the municipalities receive about $450 million from oil and gas property taxes in fiscal year 2022. Looking at the petroleum corporate income tax, so this is levied on most but not all corporations doing business in the state. That tax generated just under $300 million in fiscal year 2022, and based on improved profitability in the industry, we're forecasting $390 million in fiscal year 2023 and $320 million in fiscal year 2024. One impact that I did want to note has to do with some loss carryback provisions of the Federal CARES Act. So when that relief package was enacted by the federal government, they allowed corporations to carry back any net operating losses in calendar year 2018, 2019, or 2020, and potentially receive refunds of prior year taxes paid. The state of Alaska adopts federal corporate income tax code by reference, so we automatically adopt any changes to the federal tax code unless we specifically opt out of those changes. So we did automatically adopt those carryback provisions, and since calendar year 2020 was a rough year for the oil and gas industry in particular, there were some losses there, and about $79 million of refunds for oil and gas industry were paid out in fiscal year 2022, and those are baked into the number that's shown here. So absent those refunds, the revenue would have been a little bit higher. The oil and gas production tax, this is the state's severance tax on oil, on petroleum. For the North Slope, it consists of a net profits tax with a gross minimum tax floor. At current oil prices, we are expecting most of the companies to be paying under that net profits tax, and the production tax is expected to bring in $1.6 billion in fiscal year 2023 and about $1.2 billion in fiscal year 2024. And then the final major source of unrestricted petroleum revenue is royalties from oil and gas production on state land. Those brought in about $1.3 billion of unrestricted general fund revenue in fiscal year 22, and forecast at $1.3 billion again in fiscal year 2023, and about $1.2 billion in fiscal year 2024. Note on the royalties, in addition to this unrestricted share, there's a significant amount of restricted revenue from royalties that includes deposits to the permanent fund and school fund. And then a little bit later in the presentation, we have a series of slides that dives into the assumptions behind this petroleum revenue forecast in more detail.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Real quick, what is the driving factor behind the increase in mining royalties and rates? Is that commodity price driven, or is there a project coming online that I'm not aware of?
Sure, Representative Staff, through the chair. So, looking at mineral bonuses and rents, this represents partially an expected recovery of lease sales. So, we did have some lease sales that didn't happen during COVID, and then some delays, and we're expecting that those kind of return to a more historically normal level. So slide 15 looks at unrestricted general fund revenue from all other sources that are not the investments in the oil and gas revenues. So the largest component there is taxes. Typically, the corporate income tax is the largest non-petroleum tax type, and that was the case again in fiscal year 2022, where it generated a little over $112 million. The forecast is $105 million for fiscal year 2023 and $125 million for fiscal year 2024. The impacts of the net operating loss carrybacks for corporate income tax that I talked about on the petroleum corporate income tax, those also applied for non-petroleum corporations. And the pandemic was very challenging for some of the corporations in the tourism industry in particular, as well as companies like airlines and transportation companies. So we did see some significant refunds in fiscal year 22 amounting to about $80 million. So absent those refunds, our fiscal year 22 revenue would have been around $190 million. So the forecast here for fiscal year 23 and 24 is based on earnings projections and does reflect the potential for a little bit of an economic slowdown. Other significant taxes include the mining license tax, which is our seventh tax on the mining industry, as well as insurance premium tax, fisheries tax, and various excise taxes. In total, those non-petroleum taxes are expected to generate about $330 million in fiscal year 23 and about $335 million in fiscal year 24. And then we have a line at the bottom there for other non-petroleum revenue, and that's a variety of state revenue sources. It's things like rents and royalties on mining on state land, fines and forfeitures, charges and services, and other miscellaneous revenue like dividends to the state from state-owned corporations.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I'm just noticing a pretty large drop in 2024 for mining license. I wonder if you could tell me a story behind that.
Sure, Representative Galvin, through the chair. So minerals prices have been very, very strong, and the reduction in fiscal year 2024 to the mining license tax represents two things. It represents, first off, the futures market is suggesting that minerals prices will pull back a little bit, so we're expecting slightly lower revenue. And then at the same time, we're incorporating assumptions about potentially increased operating costs in response to some of the cost inflation that we've seen over the recent years.
Representative Conk.
Thank you, Madam. Through this year, I'm looking at the fisheries tax and watching to see these millions of dollars. Is that due to any collapses in a certain fishery industry?
Sure. Representative Cronk, the chair. So the fisheries projections do account for some of the expected lower value in certain fisheries. Fiscal year 22 also included revenue from a particularly strong salmon year.
Next up, we have Representative Josephson, followed by Representative Cannon.
The is about $170 million that we otherwise would have received. That means that it was about $80 million from petroleum industry and 90 from others.
Right, so Representative Josephson, through the chair, for fiscal year 22, the impacts were about $80 million for non-petroleum and about $79 million. So that would be the impact on fiscal year 22.
So this is given in the form of less revenue.
Representative Josephson, through the chair. So for these carryback losses, there's two options that a company has. So a company can actually request a refund for prior year taxes paid. So these would be revenues that the company had already paid us, but then we did cut checks. A company can also choose to carry forward those losses and apply them against tax payments, reducing current revenue.
Thank you, Representative
Cannon. Thank you,
Mr.
Chair.
So
my question is about some of the stuff that revenue you get. It's not in taxes, but I can't remember the federal term for it. It's the multi-state litigation revenue. Get tobacco and not the threat, but the federal, if we don't comply with having a T21, a smoking age of 21, that they will reduce that share. Have we accounted for that, or have we had any follow up from the feds of if you don't do it, we're going to take $1 million from you next year, or where are we with that tobacco revenue that's generated that's not in our?
Sure, Representative Hannon, through the chair. So the unrestricted tobacco revenue you see on slide 15, this represents a portion of the state cigarette tax revenue also represents revenue from the other tobacco products tax. There's actually a significant portion of the cigarette tax revenue that's considered restricted revenue and is not reflected in this table. In addition to those cigarette and other tobacco products tax revenues, the state also receives revenue from the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement. We consider that all to be restricted revenue, and that's reflected in the fines and forfeitures section of the revenue sources book. As far as the potential impacts of the federal government has changed their minimum tax age to 21. Alaska has not conformed in state statute, although most if not all retailers in the state are conforming to the 21 age. We haven't incorporated any potential detrimental impacts into our state revenue forecast, and I'm not really prepared to speak to the nuances of that policy.
To the chair, would you anticipate that the federal, I guess, Treasury, would they notify us prior to limiting that, or would they just at some point not transfer as much money in that multi-state litigation that we are anticipating?
Sure. Representative Hannah, I'm through the chair. I'm not prepared to speak to that. We'd be happy to get back to you on that.
Thank you, Representative Hannah. Next up, we have Representative Ortiz.
Fishery taxes for FY23 that are $26 million, and then there's mining taxes that are 52.5, mining license taxes, 52.5 million. But if you go back to slide 7, which is kind of a synopsis, pictorial synopsis of percentages of revenue that come into the state in FY23, there it says that fisheries taxes made 0.7% of the revenue, and mining made 0.4% of the revenue. So fisheries contributed more revenue, percentage of the revenue, but when you look at the numbers, fisheries taxes were only at $26 million, and then mining was at $52.5 million. So how did that work?
Sure, Representative Ortiz, through the chair. So that has to do with restrictions around how the revenue can be used. So the mining license tax is considered entirely unrestricted general fund revenue. Fisheries taxes a portion, in fact, 50% or more of those taxes are shared back to municipalities, and there's various fisheries assessments that are entirely shared with the beneficial organization. So the state receives all of the mining revenue. The state only receives a portion of the fisheries revenue as unrestricted general fund revenue.
Thank you.
Representative Kocher.
Yes, thank you. My ears perked up earlier when there was a question about carbon tax credit revenue. Because yesterday we got a presentation from OMB with a 10-year outlook that I think included the carbon tax credit revenue. This might be a nuance that's just escaped me over the years, but I thought on the 10-year plan, it was held to the same standard as the forecast you're giving us today, which is not to sort of rapid unrealized revenue when you're doing the number. Am I taken by that? Question number one. Question number two is, if that's the case, that you can't put sort of a hopeful revenue source in the 10-year model, who comes up with that?
Sure. Co-Chair Edgman through the chair. So in terms of process, the Department of Revenue produces a 10-year forecast of state revenue based on current law with no additional revenue sources incorporated. And we also do that agnostic to the budget. We then hand off that 10-year forecast to the Office of Management and Budget, and they're responsible for preparing the 10-year plan, which incorporates revenue, budget, and how they're going to square that circle. So I would defer any questions to Office of Management and Budget.
Follow up, and so that's the response I was looking for, and this number of carbon tax credits. Maybe that's something further, because I don't know, maybe understated, maybe it's overstated, but it's a number that's based on something. And
question.
All right, if we're ready to move on, the next session of the presentation talks about some of the assumptions that we've made in the forecast specific to the petroleum revenue forecast. So starting with oil price on slide 17, this shows our fall 2022 forecast compared to the spring forecast that was released earlier in 2022. For our forecast, we utilize projections outlook from the futures market to inform our price forecast that provides us with a timely and transparent methodology for the price forecast. We use the futures market for as many years as is available. For this, in this example, we had futures market outlook through 2029, and then we apply an inflation adjustment thereafter. We generated the fall price forecast on December 7th using futures market prices for the first five trading days in December, and did result in a reduction to the revenue forecast of about $12.55 for fiscal year 2023, reduction of about $9 per barrel for fiscal year 2024. Once you get out into the later years of the revenue forecast, the reduction was not quite as significant between the spring forecast and the fall forecast. And that, again, just kind of has to do with some of the volatility that was going on in the oil price market when we produced the spring revenue forecast, with the conflict in Ukraine unfolding. And as markets have stabilized a little bit, some of the near-term prices have come down a little bit.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I just have to ask this because it creates such a difference in terms of our work ahead. The price of oil and its certainty, which is everything. When you showed us earlier a slide, well, if it drops $9, you know, it's really a difference of all of our conversation in this building for the next year or two. And I know that this is a very tricky spot for you to be in to give us this, but I just, for the sake of conversation, if you could give me a little bit of sense, given the history of your predicting oil forecasting. I know this is, you change it frequently, and knowing as well that we are in a very volatile time. I would just be curious to hear your thoughts around certainty of this forecast, given what we know is happening on the world political stage, if you will, because this is going to be a really important decision for all of us in the coming term, the coming 120 days.
Sure. Representative Galvin, through the chair. So I would qualify oil prices as extremely uncertain. Actually, ever since the COVID pandemic, we've been in a period of historically high volatility, and that continues. Our forecast is definitely one most likely case within a wide range of potential outcomes. Coming up in a couple slides, I have a sensitivity analysis that kind of demonstrates what the impact of higher or lower prices would be on state revenue.
Thank you.
Slide 18 shows a comparison of the fall forecast for Alaska North Slope oil prices to a couple of different sources. We updated this comparison sheet earlier this week, actually. And our AMS Alaska North Slope price forecast is compared to Brent prices. We use Brent because that's a global benchmark that's widely quoted, widely traded, and typically Alaska oil trades very close to Brent oil. So we compare to the current futures market outlook, an average forecast from a variety of different industry analysts, and then the short-term energy outlook from the Energy Information Agency. And you can see that for the current fiscal year, our forecast is actually a little bit lower than some of the other revenue sources. But then once you get into 2024 and beyond, we're in the range of where the other revenue sources are. In general, these other sources that we look at are suggesting an oil price stabilizing in the $70 to $80 per barrel range, and that is also consistent with what we have in our revenue forecast. Slide 19 gets at that question of what if we're wrong? Oil prices are inherently uncertain, and the likelihood of prices coming in exactly as forecast is pretty low. So what this slide shows is our fiscal year 2024 forecast of $3.4 billion of unrestricted general fund revenue. That's before accounting for the permanent fund transfer. That's just the petroleum and non-petroleum revenues. That's based on an average oil price of $81 per barrel for Alaska North Slope crude. For fiscal year 2024, each $1 change in oil price above or below that forecast leads to about a $70 million difference in unrestricted general fund revenue. Given the structure of how our oil and gas severance production tax works, that value per dollar gets a little bit higher once you go above about $90 per barrel oil, and it gets a little bit lower once you go below about $70 per barrel, but it's about $70 of unrestricted revenue per dollar of oil price around the forecast. Slide 20 looks at the North Slope oil production forecast. This is a recap of some of the information that was provided the other day by the Department of Natural Resources. So we show the official forecast, which is for stable to slightly increasing oil production, which is great news for the state as some of these new developments come online. We also show a high and a low case around the oil production forecast, which is really, again, meant to speak to another source of uncertainty in the forecast. So just based on the performance of these existing fields, once you get out a decade, while the official forecast is for about 550,000 barrels per day of production, the range there is production could be less than 300,000 barrels per day. It could be more than 800,000 barrels per day.
Does that include the, when you put your numbers in there, does that include Willow, Pica, or, I'm assuming there's some highs and lows to the middle line, and I'm assuming those are projected fields coming on in a couple of places there, and I was wondering if you could speak to what those variations were that you included in the forecast.
Sure, Chair Johnson. So those new fields are included in the forecast on a risked basis, as was described by Department of Natural Resources. So they account for the uncertainty around the timing and production of those fields by only incorporating a portion of the potential production from those fields. That is baked into the official forecast here. What the high and low case represent is, when you're drilling, when you're projecting out potential decline rates, and especially when you're bringing on new fields, there's a lot of uncertainty around how those fields would perform. And, if a lot of those wells and fields perform better than expected, then you could have something more in line with the high case. And if there's, more disappointing production, that could get you towards the low case. And then slide 21, again, looking at the North Slope oil production forecast, looks at the next 5 years of expected production in our most likely case compared to the spring revenue forecast. The best way to interpret this slide is that there were only minor changes to the official revenue forecast, especially in the near term. Generally, projects are progressing about as was expected in the spring forecast. There have been some minor reductions from the spring forecast, but still a trend of stable to slightly increasing production overall. Slide 22 looks at allowable lease expenditures for the North Slope, and how these have changed over the next over the last decade and how we're expecting these to change over the coming decade. These allowable lease expenditures represent any operating and capital costs incurred by companies that are allowed to be deducted against the state's production tax. This includes most, but not all, of the costs of producing oil in the state. We also include a 10-year history of oil and gas employment for comparison, so you can see the general correlation between company spending and employment on the North Slope. So we track these for two reasons. First, as an input into our oil production tax forecast, since it is a net profits-based tax, and then also as an indicator of company activity. What we saw in fiscal year 2022 is North Slope capital expenditures were about $1.4 billion, and operating expenditures were about $2.5 billion. And those both represented continued lower levels of activity following the COVID recession. What we've seen over the last several months is activity has definitely begun to pick up. This is a robust winter of activity on the North Slope, and we are expecting a rebound in overall company spending in the current fiscal year, as well as fiscal year 24 and 25. And then a stabilization with capital expenditures stabilizing between $2 and $2.5 billion per year. Meanwhile, we expect that operating expenditures will slowly increase over time. The combination of inflationary impacts as well as the cost of operating some of the new fields that are expected to come online.
Representative Josephson.
Representative Josephson, through the chair. So the way the oil and gas production tax works is, for purposes of calculating the production tax value, which is the net profits component of the production tax, allowable lease expenditures are allowed to be deducted from the value of oil production in calculating your tax. So for a company with sufficient production, sufficient gross revenue, they would be able to apply these costs in the year incurred into the production tax liability. If a company does not have sufficient gross revenue to apply these costs, they would earn a carried forward lease expenditure, and that can be basically allows them to realize the benefit of that spending in a future year, and they can apply that against the future year tax liability. You're correct. There is a provision whereby the value of those carried forward lease expenditures reduces by 10% annually, beginning with the 8th or 11th year of after the carry forward was earned, depending on whether the carry forward was earned for a project that was in production or not in production at the time it was earned.
Yes,
I'll...
Sure. So that was...
Yeah, Representative Josephson, through the chair, it does put some pressure on, and the reduction in the value of those carry forwards is actually unconventional when you compare it to other jurisdictions. Most other jurisdictions, actually several, provide an uplift where the value increases over time. So that is a unique provision of Alaska's tax law.
Richard.
how little it fits into this slide. This was a presentation we had for the question. And Willow, as we know, is getting record decision based on the vaccine. First of all, it's line up in fall 2022, basically takes that into consideration and putting the peak production aside, which is 180,000 barrels a day. That blue line basically means like a 4 microcent. But I mean, you factored all that in, right? Let's say there was a hiccup with Willow and it went further in time before it got to opening production. That blue line sort of contemplates that, or is it based on the production forecast we heard yesterday where Willow is going to be up and running here at some point in the near future?
Sure. Co-Chair Edgman to the chair. So the production forecast that you see here is the same production forecast that was presented by Department of Natural Resources. So they produce the forecast for us. We collaborate with them. In terms of comparing the spring forecast and the fall forecast on slide 2021, this represents primarily a reevaluation of some of the near-term projects and the performance of the major fields and some of the major activities in those existing fields. When you're looking at the impact of some of those new developments, those are largely beyond this five-year window on slide 2021. And that's actually why we chose to present a five-year outlook here on slide 21, is really to focus on the next few years and the more certain portion of the production forecast.
Thank you. I think that the perspective I was seeking, that Willow is going to play a significant part in the overall well production, not necessarily a window of time.
Co-Chair Edgman through the chair, Willow is a very significant potential development to the state of Alaska. We do include potential future production as well as associated development expenditures in the forecast. We include those on a risked basis, which acknowledges the potential for delays or the probability that the project will occur. But definitely a very important project and very significant. All right, so moving on to slide 2023. This slide shows a history and forecast for transportation costs for the North Slope, also referred to as netback costs. These are important to look at because they represent the cost of getting oil to market, and they are subtracted from the value of oil for both production tax and royalty purposes. The transportation costs include all costs of getting the oil to market. These include feeder pipeline tariffs for getting oil to pump station one for any outlying fields on the North Slope. They include the tariff for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline for getting the oil from the North Slope to Valdez. And then they include tanker cost for getting the oil from Valdez to market, typically on the West Coast. In fiscal year 22, the average transportation cost for Alaska North Slope oil was $9.77 per barrel. And the forecast is for $9.92 per barrel in fiscal year 2023. And $9.37 per barrel in fiscal year 2024. We are forecasting that the transportation cost will remain under $10 per barrel until fiscal year 2032. That stable transportation cost is a function of the stable to increasing production forecast. And that stable to increasing production forecast is offsetting impacts of inflation. One other thing you'll notice is comparing fiscal year 23 and to 24, we are forecasting a bit of a decrease in transportation costs. We've seen the marine transportation costs in particular have been fairly elevated last year and this year, and we're expecting those to moderate in fiscal year 2024.
Representative Stout.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, you are wonderful folks from the Department of Revenue. So I am a little curious here, why would you be projecting such a downturn in transportation costs, given the fact that the previous slides, you were projecting increases in OPEX and CAPEX and inflationary pressure on production. As you well know, all of those things are basically deductions for our current oil tax system. So if all things are equal, shouldn't we be expecting less revenue off the same per barrel oil production if increases in cost to produce that oil are going up?
Sure. Representative Stout through the chair. So slide 22, when we were looking at the lease expenditures, these represented total expected expenditures for operating the fields, and we are seeing some moderate increases in the cost of operating those fields, and then capital expenditures, which are the investments in new fields. When we're looking on slide 2023, these values are presented on a per barrel basis, and they represent the cost. So for a pipeline tariff, it represents the cost of operating the pipeline divided by the number of barrels going through that pipeline. And as you see slightly higher oil production, if you have a fairly stable operation cost for the pipeline, the cost on a per barrel basis actually decreases. Looking at the marine transportation costs in particular, which is where we saw some increases in fiscal year 2022 and 2023, we believe some of the driving factors behind the marine transportation costs were overall tightness in the shipping market. Has to do with difficulty in getting marine transportation for a variety of goods and services. So some cost drivers there, and then a significant component of the marine transportation cost is actually the cost of fuel. And as we've seen some kind of some moderations in the global supply chain issues, we're expecting to decrease some of the pressures on operations cost, and then with the reductions in oil price, the cost of the fuel for these tankers actually decreases.
Good afternoon. For the record, Colleen Glover, Tax Division Director. And this next slide, I'll just provide a little bit of context to this before we kind of look at the numbers on the graph. Prior to 2016, there was oil and gas tax credits that in statute allowed the state, either the taxpayer could use them against their tax liability or the state would repurchase these credits back. Those provisions were changed in 2016 and 2017 to eliminate that cash provision, but there still is a balance of these that the certificate holders have applied for cash and we have not paid them. We have been paying them over time. The good news is the balance is about $384 million at the start of fiscal year 2023. And the provisions for the amount, there's a statutory formula that kind of has the formula. It's based on the price of oil and total production taxes levied are. The budget for FY23 budget was assuming a $330 million appropriation. That was appropriation not to exceed with the fall forecast and the change in oil prices reducing in the fall 2022 forecast. That for the statutory calculation is $281 for fiscal year 2023. The budget for fiscal year 2023 for these tax credits was a little bit unique because it was that the fiscal year one plus there was a $60 million supplemental for fiscal year 2022. So the full amount shown on the schedule, so the gray bar for 2023 is $341 million, so that's the $281 for this year, and the $60 million supplemental for FY 2022. what the blue bar for 2023 is showing is what would be left after paying that amount. So we end up with about $43 million owed at the end of this fiscal year, and the $43 million is the same as the gray bar on 2024. So we're assuming we would have about $43 million of these credits to pay out next fiscal year. For information.
So the gray bar is what's left for 2024, correct? And not what's in the budget. I mean, is that budgeted to pay those, or?
Chair Johnson, so for 2024, the $43 million is in the budget. Okay. And one thing that is kind of unique for these credits, I believe a lot of you know, a lot of information we considered in statute is taxpayer confidential, so we can't typically share information about individual taxpayers. There is provision in law that allows, well, has us, we do produce an annual report that's already been provided to the legislature of each person or entity that received money from last calendar year and the amount they received for those credits. That letter was transmitted earlier this month. We can provide another copy if needed. That gives you kind of a good indication of who is getting these credits on an annual basis. And then for the money that is in the budget for this year, the 281 for fiscal year 2023, and the $60 million supplemental of that 341, we dispersed $196 million. That is, we dispersed it in July of 2022. That's in the letter. So we have spent or dispersed some of the FY23 appropriation, but not all of it. There was unique budget language in the budget bill for fiscal year 2023 that had kind of a not to exceed and to be based on actual taxes levied. We haven't levied all taxes yet, so we are evaluating, you know, as the year goes and after spring forecast, depending on where oil prices and the forecast goes for production tax, to determine what, if anything, to pay out for the rest of the fiscal year.
Thank you. Representative Josephson, staff, and Hammond.
The plan was to hope to spur development so that we would have a win-win derived from this. But the delay resulted in third parties getting control of the certificates. People were short on payroll. That's how I understand it. I guess my question is, now that we're putting paying these and we're retiring these, are these just going to be dents? If we owe, which we can't identify as providing that return, or do we think, in fact, this could fuel more development that we can benefit from?
Representative Josephson to the chair. So a few things on that. One, I think looking at the annual report and seeing who was the recipient is kind of telling information, you know, if it is somebody who's actually producing now or someone who explored and is not producing. So I think that's a really good indicator. And then as far as being sold to a third party, there is provisions in law that allowed the certificate holder to assign them to somebody else at the time that they applied, or within 30 days, we do have that information. So if I had assigned mine to another entity and I was getting money back from the state, we would actually pay the assignee. So we do have some information on that, but what we don't know is if I had used it for collateral for a month or some other reason, we're not privy to that information. So I think there's, you know, a mixture of different ones. You know, the good news is, you know, there's a lot less owed now than there was. And just another point is that it's not a static number. There's nothing to prevent a taxpayer from using these against their tax liability. Some of them do not have a tax liability because they're an explorer and they don't have production yet. But we have seen now with higher oil prices that there was a need to use some of them. So that has helped reduce the balance. And they can also be sold to a party that can use them against tax liability. So, I mean, it's a dynamic number as well.
Representative Stout.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, so just a couple of quick questions. Did I hear you say that the total outstanding is a fixed liability for this tax credit is $384 million?
Rep Staff, through the chair, the current balance is 300. Well, it was 384 at the end of this fiscal year. We paid 196.
So effectively, is that the 196 after I subtract that? Is that the final liability, or is there more potential liabilities for the state through this program in the longer term?
Rep Staff, through the chair, that's almost a maximum amount. I don't want to say that's definitive. We do audit these, so there could be audit disputes, and so there is a potential for those to change, but there's not new ones that could get earned. So the only way that the balance would increase is if there's some, you know, we've audited and then litigated, and if we lose, that amount could increase.
There's a statutory repayment system. Quick question for you guys. Inflation, kind of our friend when it comes to paying debts. How far can it slow pay this payment?
Rep Staff, through the chair. So in statute, it's a suggested formula. The appropriation is controlled by the legislature. So there have been some years, even though we would, the formula would suggest an amount to pay, that there was no money appropriated. So the appropriation amount, we forecast what that amount should be under statute, but the appropriation is up to the legislature.
Thank you,
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, through the chair. Glover, the intention last year of the legislature and the floor debate was to pay them all off because the way we structured it wasn't. My question is, how did we decide what didn't get paid? Was it a proportion to everybody equally, or did we pay the oldest credits due? Or, you know, when we were having the debate, we heard from sort of the smallest companies saying it's the biggest burden on us. So, was it just a proportional to everyone, or were there other factors about who didn't get paid, or what wasn't?
So, Rep. Hannon, through the chair, great question. So, another piece of information that's included in our annual report is we track these by years, or we call them buckets, based on when they applied. And so, anything in a year we group together in one bucket, and there are statutory provisions how we pay them. So, the good news is we have paid all of the 2016 now, and the statute in place for those. You'll see on this report, we paid $196 million, and those were all applying the same percentage to everybody. So if we had $100 million, everybody would get the same percentage of their certificate. So those were the last that was under that statutory provision. Going forward with the 2017 going forward, it's different statute, and those actually kind of put them in ranked order according to Alaska Hire, which creates a whole other set of challenges for us to administer. But you can see on the report, the 2017 balance is $131 million, and we have the others by year. And so those would be paid off by year and then a priority. Okay. So the last slide that we have today to talk to is an update on our oil and gas production tax audits. And just for some context and background on why we talk about just the oil and gas production tax audits here is they're very unique as opposed to all of our other tax programs. All of our other tax programs and statute have a 3-year statute limitations for the state to have any assessment or audit assessment generated for them. Our oil and gas production tax audits, though, had a 6-year statute of limitations, and that was changed back in 2007 when we went from a gross tax to a net profits tax. So we've identified
then that it would be complex and be a lot of work for an audit staff to kind of navigate the whole new tax system. You know, you can imagine we have auditors that deal with like millions of lines of transactions to audit. So it's been good, and you know, there's pros and cons to having this longer statute of limitations. But it also, you know, the downside is that we would issue audits, you know, 6 years after they file their tax returns, and it just created kind of some interesting dynamics. And really, we want to be more current on our audits and be in line with all of our other tax programs. There's been a concerted effort over the past several years to kind of change that cycle to be more in line with our other tax programs and be, while not obligated under statute, but in effect, we would like to be on a 3-year kind of cycle for our oil and gas production tax audits. Our team's been doing amazing work. They've caught up. Now all the audits through tax year 2017 are complete. And they're finalizing the 2018 and 19, and then looking to get 2020 audits done next year. We're kind of in this 3 to 4 year window for the audit cycle. You know, I imagine there's some smaller companies are less time consuming than others, but we do audit all of our producers every year, which is also kind of a unique component compared to all of our other tax programs. A few things that have helped us to kind of be more up date and to be more efficient in this audit program was our tax revenue management system that was funded by the legislature. We have a very robust tax accounting system, and our taxpayers file online. We are not filing returns for anybody. It's all done online, and it's great. It gives us information. We audit, make adjustments. Our system recalculates the taxes, interest, and penalties. So we have a very robust system, which is very much appreciated, and also trying to be, more working with the taxpayers to ensure, you know, we have good communication. We now have, audit meetings with them, audit plans, and it's a lot more robust and kind of structured audit program. And then just the last thing, having a stable tax regime helps because then our auditors know our taxes now, and so they're not having to learn new systems all the time. But the good news is they are, meeting the goal that was kind of self-imposed by the department to have this.
Representative Yellman.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, and thank you all. I just have a question that's more, if it's okay, it's not on this particular slide, but heading back. So if you'd like me to wait for that, I'm happy to wait. But I believe that's the last slide. Is that correct? I think we're all done. Okay. Thank you very much. Through the chair, I'm going to ask for us to. I'm looking at slide 7, which shows me roughly you were as you were going over projected revenue. You were thinking it's about in thirds, investment earnings, federal revenue, and petroleum. And I think the rest of the presentation dug in very deeply on the petroleum side, which I very much appreciate. We understand now the employment levels, the challenges with costs and predictability around price and such. I wonder if we could at some point, or maybe you already have this coming in the future, digging in a little bit on the federal bucket. Love to know more about, I know that there's an 8-year package, which is a big spend with federal dollars. Do we know what years those dollars are coming into our state, a sense of that, what that would look like, and even the certainty of whether it'll come and what the state match might be expected. I know a lot of it is capital projects and such, but I would certainly be grateful to know more on that, especially on just a sense of the numbers of when for each year. It looks like we can maybe predict out 1 year you have based on your work likely with the federal delegation from Alaska, but I would love to know a bit more on that bucket, and similarly on the investment earnings. just to have a deeper sense of, again, challenges related to world markets and whether how it consistent it's been looking with regard to earnings, and maybe a little bit more depth of that work that's being done on the state's behalf. And that's all I have. Thank you, Chair Johnson.
All right, doesn't look like there's any additional questions. Our next is our response. I don't, were you wanting a response back from our presenters, or would you like a response?
I think that.
Just let me finish my question. Would you like a response back from the presenters now, or are you asking for a response back at a future committee? And if you are, then I want to make sure that I get that down in its entirety so I know what to ask to have them bring back.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I am not sure of what the presentations are in the future because this is new to me. Perhaps we already have that lined up. But if we don't have it lined up, I would ask if in the future we could have a presentation around the other buckets, particularly federal, and looking out in terms of how, if it's, you know, I think there, if we know there's an eight-year package, maybe we know when those dollars are predicted to come into the state or not. But that would be helpful, I think, in terms of revenue forecast to know those, but the federal bucket, along with investment. I know you probably are working with a 7%-ish, but it would be nice to dig in a little deeper to what the specific parameters are around that as well.
Commissioner Crum.
Thank you, Representative Galvin, through the chair. This is Adam Crum, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. The federal revenue side is an item that OMB works with. There is a presentation that we're working on. We'll be delivering to House Finance when the chair asks for it on other state investment aspects, as well as the Permanent Fund Corp will typically come and present on some of the POV items.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, through the chair.
All right. With, I see no additional questions and no further business here. We have one. Our next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, our next scheduled meeting will be on Friday at 1:30 p.m. And I do not have the topic in front of me, but with no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.